And good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. And our guest today is Robin Ox. She's a writer. Her best-selling book, of all of the other books that you've written, your best-selling book is Getting By. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff today, but buy issues and all kinds
tea
of stuff.
Tea issues.
You know, on my weekend music show, we were just talking about the difference between, because of a song we're playing, what's the difference between a highway and a byway? And I said that Robin was going to be on this, which she might know, since that might be my issue. And she's
which has got to be an easier question.
The transportation
than
is one of my specialties.
Yeah,
right.
Well, by transportation.
By planes and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say.
Bicycles.
Uh-huh. You know, the difference in Texas always is, the big question is, what's the difference between a frontage road and a service road?
Mm-hmm.
That's a much tougher question.
That
I
is
think.
A tough, yeah. tough question. But she's not a frontage expert.
No.
She's a bi expert. And I just went on a long bicycle ride.
Oh.
A 90-mile ride. So.
Good for you.
Yeah. So we're just bringing up the buy stuff.
I am truly impressed.
This is just the buy stuff we're bringing up. Seriously, Getting By. Your book is about?
It's a 42-country anthology featuring people from all over the world who self-identify as bisexual, talking about their lives, their experiences, their coming out stories, their families, how they find community, their politics, what they believe in. It's a really amazing book, and the people in the book range from the average person on the street to people who are professional thinkers and writers, you know, professors and academics. So it's a real range of voices and a range of genders and a range of everything. It's a really broad, sweeping book.
And you were here in Dallas this week because the big Out and Equal conference is going on at the Hilton Anatole Hotel. And I walked in expecting people to be dribbling in yesterday morning. So I walked
in. The conference began yesterday.
The conference began yesterday, and I expected, you know, for they have a 4-day conference, people. I walked into the ballroom. There were already, you know, at like 10:30 in the morning, 2,500 people were already seated. I felt like I was at black tie dinner because it was that formal and fancy and what was going on.
It was packed.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
And they're expecting.
And very produced as well.
This is Dallas.
This is Dallas.
You know.
It's not just Dallas, but it's a conference that has a lot of corporate sponsors.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is.
So they have a different level of technology than most grassroots conferences that I go to.
I can relate.
Is the mic working?
Yeah, there a mic?
Is there a mic?
That wasn't going on yesterday.
Sorry, we can't afford a lavalier mic.
Yeah, what was going on yesterday was, and now the CEO of such and such corporation, I mean, it was at that level, just an amazing conference, bringing together the different employee resource groups from hundreds of companies across the country.
There were people, I think, from, I think they said 30 different countries as well, not just the U.S., which I wasn't aware of until I arrived.
Yeah, apparently one of the big issues this year is not just bringing equality to American corporations, but bringing it to corporations around the world, which is kind of an amazing.
Yeah, one of the big questions for corporations, for example, is if they have partner benefits, how far do those spread? Are they only in states that have domestic partnership or marriage equality, or are they only in countries that, you know, which countries do they spread to? Do they do it globally? It's a big question, and I think there's a lot of pressure on corporations, as it should be, to do it globally and to set a standard.
For all of their employees.
Yeah, to treat all employees equally.
Last year, I spoke at Texas's Diversity Conference, and one of the speakers, fellow speakers, he brought up as far as employment and equality within the workplace. You know, I never really thought about this, but what happens when you work for a company and they send you overseas, and they're normally sending you and your partner? Well, they happen to send you overseas for business to a country where homosexuality is really illegal. I mean, like, you can be jailed for it. I'm like, that's something I've really thought about.
Well, it also works in this direction because of DOMA and the federal government not recognizing even married same-sex couples from other countries. It's often hard for corporations to bring good people from other countries to the U.S. because of that. A lot of good people don't want to come because they can't bring their partner, they can't get visas, because it's very easy if you're married to get a visa for your partner and your family. But if you're in a same-sex couple, the U.S. is one of the countries that makes it very difficult.
The U.S. is not welcoming to even corporate executives coming into the country.
And it makes it actually makes it hard. I worked at a university for 26 years, and it makes it hard to recruit faculty from abroad as well. Like, if you're trying to get this amazing faculty member from the Netherlands or from Spain or from, you know, any of a number of countries that do recognize marriage equality or some sort of partnership, they don't want to come because...
Right.
Because of that. And also, and if they do come, you have to figure out a way to find a job that for their partner that will allow them to get a visa as well. But it's like all this sleight of hand and all this extra work that has to be done to get people to come.
Whereas if they were married or where if their marriage was recognized.
Right, if we respected
marriage,
we would be in much better shape.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're actually in one of the difficult countries. Not one of the countries where you can get killed.
Right.
At least not by the state.
Or you can legally get killed.
Right, not by the state, but it's definitely...
We're not in Uganda.
Right, we're not in Uganda, but we're also not in Canada.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Home of my marriage.
Well, that is where you...
Yay.
That is where your marriage took place.
It is.
The other thing, the other issue was, should corporations, and this is something that a number of their workshops will be dealing with this week, should your corporation even... accept work in a country that isn't going to accept some of your employees? So, and the issue goes beyond just gay employees. Should you accept work in Saudi Arabia where you have female executives, but they can't go in?
Right.
Or Jewish employees.
Or Jewish employees.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it goes so far beyond because... You know, we always say, well, discrimination is discrimination. They don't like gay people. They don't like gay Jewish people. They don't like black people. They don't like those kind of people. You know, people who don't like certain groups of people don't like people. And I think the Tea Party is showing that very handsomely right now.
Such a long list.
Yeah, it is. You know, they like to act like, no, we're only discriminating against this one group. But when it comes right down to it, they don't like anybody other than themselves. We're talking to Robin Ox today. She is here in Dallas for the Out and Equal conference, but you've been doing a whole bunch of other things. You were at SMU speaking and corrupting the minds of the students up there. I mean, discussing things.
Engaging in brilliant conversations with some really smart, thoughtful students. Yeah, it was great. And actually, it was students, staff, and faculty were at my programs, which was also very nice because that gives a broader discussion.
You know, we've had, in the last year, a group has been forming at SMU of GLBT alumni, which has been great.
Oh, yay.
It's, you know, it's kind of a word-of-mouth thing, but it's been, you know, fully supported by the university, and I think that's just tremendous.
And alumni groups are really important.
We have one at my alma mater, which is Baylor University.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not exactly at your university.
No, not at, you know. We get things like cease and desist letters.
I was about to say.
It's around your university.
Right.
Despite
so
university.
Many universities have them, maybe just not on campus or acknowledged.
There you go.
The other local school that just formed a new gay and lesbian group is Texas Christian University over in Fort Worth.
I heard they're doing a lot of organizing at TCU. Mm-hmm. Yeah, doing GLBT. They're going to be doing a conference as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think in collaboration with SMU.
Hmm. Well, good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them.
And TCU has the ever lovely Reverend Dr. Stephen Sprinkle at Bright Theology.
They have
a great leader right there on campus.
I was telling Robin when I first got here, I was so happy to see your face in person because I just saw her on TV not too long ago. She was in a documentary called Out in America, which they show on David's favorite channel.
No, I have nothing against public broadcasting. I just call our local affiliate the Tea Party of public broadcasting.
Okay. Well, tell us about Out in America. How are you? How did you get involved in it?
Well, they contacted me and asked me to be part of it, and I later found out that one of the producers had heard me speak before and was familiar with my work, and he suggested it. I didn't know until after the film came out how I got involved. But they called, and they did this documentary where they interviewed a whole bunch of different people all across the United States, and quite a range of folks. They were the feature couples. There were two couples, one in their 70s, one in their 80s. Mm-hmm. An early male couple called Harolds.
And yeah, both of their name were Harold.
They were both Harold, and they were adorable. And then there was Connie and Ruthie. Mm-hmm. A female couple, I believe, who were in their 70s. And then they interviewed everything from a woman who is an AIDS researcher in Washington, D.C., to a horse cowboy, a rancher, who was a gay man, to Shelley Wright, the country western singer, to Armstead Maupin, the writer who wrote Tales of the City, to a young female couple, a young male rapper. It was quite a spread.
It was
lovely.
It was very well done.
And they wove the stories together in quite an amazing way. And I think they did a great job, because when you think of the task that this producer took on, mm-hmm. the man who made the film, who incidentally was a straight man,
yeah,
and he took on the task of kind of telling a very broad story in a way that would be understandable both to straight audiences and to LGBT audiences, and not get anybody upset or offended, in 1 hour.
That's pretty amazing.
I mean, it's a nearly impossible challenge. I think he did an amazing job.
Did you ask him why he did it? What was his passion in doing this?
I believe that it's an issue that he cares about, and he has, you know, close friends who are LGBT, and he's a documentarian, and he's also done films on other things that he just wasn't as closely personally connected to, but he's really good at that. Yeah, he's really good at looking at an issue and looking at it and trying to really do justice to it. And so far, from what I've heard, everyone who's seen it, who I've spoken to, has been surprised and impressed.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah,
so it's called Out in America.
Sometimes somebody from the outside could actually do a better job doing a video like that, because they're a little bit more dispassionate about it. Patty and I would do something like that from extreme point of view, probably.
What do you think?
I think.
I don't know. I was in a minor role in a documentary filmed here that was aired on Logo. But it was... I didn't think it was stilted or anything. I thought it was, mm-hmm. you know, pretty well done. But it was a nerve-wracking working with the crew.
Mm-hmm. Filming part is hard.
And you have to remember to turn that mic off at sometimes. I wore one for a week. You have to remember, like, I'm going to go to the restroom now. I'm going to turn that off.
Right.
I mean, my experience was we were sitting at a... I was sitting in a hard wooden chair, you know, in the middle of this room, and I'm a very kinetic person. I like to move around, and I'm very expressive, and I usually don't sit when I speak. And so I was sitting there for about 2 hours. The other interesting thing is you get interviewed for a really long time about a whole lot of different topics, and you have no idea what they're going to focus on, what they're mm-hmm. going to select. And so until the moment when I saw the film, I had no idea. I knew I was still in it, because I did ask them, have I been edited out? And they said, no, you're in it. But other than that, I had no idea what topic they would focus on.
Were you pleased with what they did?
Yes.
Edit in?
Yeah. I got to talk about marriage equality as a topic, and then I also got to talk about my own marriage and how I met Peg. And it was pretty lovely.
Well, tell us about that.
About our engagement. I talked about our engagement.
Tell us about it.
Sure.
Tell us the story.
Well, it's better on the film, but basically what happened is that when the Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts ruled for marriage equality, they gave the legislature 6 months to figure out the details. So Peg and I had already been together for 7 years. And it was I think it was entirely clear, even from the outset, that we would get married. But then we went through this little song and dance about who to ask whom. And so, with all these little hints and teasing and jokes, and there was one point when we were in a car driving somewhere, I think to visit my mom, and I said, so, are we going to get married? And she said something like, not here, not now. We're not talking about it this way. And I said, okay.
In the car going 60.
Yeah. So then I kept waiting and waiting and waiting for her to do something, and she didn't do anything. And then finally one morning, she's not a morning person. She kind of leaps out of bed at the crack of noon or 10 or something much later than I do.
So she's not listening to it right now?
No, she's definitely not listening. She is most, I can guarantee she is sound asleep. So anyway, one morning I woke up early, as I usually do, and I went downstairs and I made this basically a trail of blue objects leading from her coffee maker down to the floor, out the back door, into the backyard, and to a little spot in the backyard where I had this beautiful blue metal bowl, and in the bowl I put a little card that said, "Peg, will you marry me?" And then I just waited for a couple of hours until she lurched out of bed and stumbled downstairs, and then she found it, and she followed the trail, and she got outside, and she saw it, and I was kind of following her, and so was our cat. And then she looked at it, and she just looked at me, and she said, "Yes."
Aww.
That's sweet.
It was quite a wonderful moment. But I got to talk about it. I think they used that something about that, and it was sweet.
And then awesome. you were That's actually really married.
Awesome. Oh, and then they showed photos from that, because my neighbor actually came and took some photos. Oh.
Yeah, I remember that.
And we had photos of the trail itself. Trail of blue objects. So they somehow put it together to almost look like a film, even though it was just maybe 10 stills. But it was lovely.
And then your actual awesome. Marriage? Was it right after it was legalized?
Minutes after it was legalized. We got married on the first day it was legal. Mm-hmm. We went down at 5 in the morning with 5 other couples, all good friends of ours, and we all waited online together. And in Massachusetts, there's a 3-day waiting period. Mm-hmm. And in order to avoid that, you had to apply for a waiver. So you had to go to court to get a waiver. So we went to City Hall, to Town Hall, got our permit, our license, and then we walked down the street to the courthouse with everybody else, with a lot of other couples, and we got applied for the waiver, and we went before a judge and got that. And then we walked back to the courthouse, and we got married. And the Washington Post covered our wedding.
Oh, nice.
We were
nice.
There, a little poster couple. And so there was both the video of the wedding up on the Washington Post website and a really beautiful article that came out on May 18th, 2004, the day after we got married. Mm-hmm. And it was lovely. But it was an amazing day, and it was just beautiful. And then we ended up going to 25 weddings that year,
wow.
including our own, and of which one was a mixed-sex couple. Our friends Kathy and Kevin got married that year, but
well, good for them for being out there. And
then there was one male couple, and then all the others were our good woman friends, and it was amazing that year, just in terms of weddings.
And yeah. I just had to ask, since Peg is not a morning person, was she there for it at 5 a.m.?
I can't really promise that, but she did say the right things at the right moments.
All right, there you go.
She hasn't regretted her decision.
Well, that's good. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guest is Robin Ox. She's the author of Getting By. Are you going to be out speaking somewhere while you're here that can catch you, or do we have you at the end of your visit?
I'm in the middle of my visit, but right now I'm at the Out and Equal Conference.
Okay, so to catch you at the Anatole Hotel. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Promote your business or event on KNON. KNON currently has space available to run announcements for you. Tell KNON's listeners about your goods, services, nightclub, concert, or event. Help keep the voice of the people on the air while putting your information on the air. Rates are the best available on Dallas Radio. Call now for more information at 214-828-9500, extension 227. Or click on Contact Us at KNON.org to find a sales rep. It's a great way for your business to support community radio while letting more people know about you.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERimaging.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Gareth Thomas, one of the only few professional athletes to ever come out. He played rugby. He was one of the few to ever come out actually during their career. You know, most of the gay athletes have come out after they retired. Well, now he's announcing that he's retiring from rugby. The 37-year-old Welshman said that it's been the best 4 years of his life since he came out, which was 2 years ago, and now that he walks with his head held high with pride. So I'm really happy for him. He's really made such a mark on the sports world. And Mickey York is set to play Gareth Thomas in a movie that's going to start filming, I think, next year. So that's going to be interesting.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. The Smithsonian Museum is now showcasing some of the artifacts related to the work of gay rights activist and pioneer Frank Kameny, who just passed away earlier this month on National Coming Out Day. Mm-hmm. The exhibit is already open. It's going to run all the way through January of next year. A 5-hour public viewing of Kameny was going to be held on November 3rd. Plans for an official memorial service are still ongoing. GLSEN, that's the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Network. We haven't talked about them in forever. They held their annual Respect Awards this past Friday, and they honored Chaz Bono with a special award for all of his good work that he's done for the LGBT community. Now, I was going to say that Chaz is still on Dancing with the Stars as a contestant.
Nope.
But David told me he got voted off last night.
Oh, really?
Oh.
But you know what? He got.
And it's so disappointing because this week, the Dallas Bar Association has declared this week to be pro bono week. So what a terrible week to vote Chaz off.
But kudos to him. I think he got a lot further than most people expected him to get.
He's a pretty good dancer.
Yeah.
I thought he's pretty talented.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Please tell me if Chaz is gone, that Nancy Grace has been gone.
I don't know if Nancy Grace
I don't
is.
Watch the show. I look
I don't
it up.
Watch it anymore. That's a good question. Good question. But here's the thing that surprised
Nancy
me.
Nancy Grace is a name that is an oxymoron.
Touche. Anyway, some of the Dancing with the Stars contestants came to support Chaz, and they included David Arquette, no surprise that he came, Ricky Lake and Carson Kressley, and Nancy Grace came.
Really?
Yeah, that surprised me. I'm not a big fan of Nancy Grace, but, you know, I don't know how she stands on GOPT issues. I guess she's just a B about everything else. So, I don't know. The Oscar-nominated...
She's a bisexual about other things?
Oh, yeah. A B, not a B.
Yeah, a B,
okay,
not
got
a B.
Got it, okay.
The Oscar-nominated film, The Kids Are All Right, which starred Annette Bening, Julianne Moore, and Mark Ruffalo, is now coming back to the screen, but this time to cable as a series on HBO. Mm-hmm. I'm actually looking forward to this. It's a really good movie. The new show will be an hour-long weekly drama, and it's going to be directed by the same person who directed the movie. So far, they have not announced when it's going to start shooting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I have nothing else gay to watch on TV now that True Blood is gone.
Are you not watching the A-List Dallas?
Really?
Because I actually I don't watch a lot of stuff on Logo. I think, you know, Aaron and I are like, why do we not watch this a lot of this GLBT stuff? We've got a whole channel.
Right.
And I think it's because we're saturated in it all the time.
I think
like,
it's
why sit down?
Logo doesn't really play much GOBT stuff.
Well, it could be. I mean, we don't go seek it out, though, because I think it's because we're pretty saturated in it already.
I do seek it out, and I don't watch Logo that much anymore. They do have a lot of GOBT content, but it's not good. It's not. And stuff like A-List Dallas is one reason why.
Oh, it's. I had like 3 minutes of it.
Yeah,
I just
it's like, oh my God.
Check it out,
I
and I was like,
it.
Oh
yeah,
my
yeah.
God, I can't believe they're airing this.
And I met the full cast of it.
Oh.
Oh,
no,
I bet
yeah.
you did.
I'm so sorry.
But there's another gay channel that's great. Here TV. We have that.
Yeah, and also Bravo. Do you know that Logo annoyed at Arnold at The Voice for something that he had written?
Yes.
And they will not send screeners or any promos to Dallas Voice anymore.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That's really stupid.
Yeah.
Well, the channel is run by straight people.
It is.
You do realize that Bravo actually has gay executives. In fact, one of them's here at Out and Equal. He spoke yesterday. A real funny guy.
Yeah.
But Logo doesn't.
No, Logo,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, our guest today is Robin Oakes. She is the author of Getting By. What is your website?
robinochs.com, RobynOchs.com.
And if you want more information about stuff that Robin does, you can go to her website and find out more about her. Now,
yeah, I have a pretty extensive website with all kinds. I have a bunch of articles up there. I have all kinds of links, other resources. I have my speaking schedule.
And let's talk about some of the buy issues, because, you know, of the four letters, the L and the G we cover pretty well, because Laurent's a G and you're an L, Patty.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know what you are.
And we don't know what I am. I'm an O for an other. And well, actually, our guest next week, Candy, that's why she comes on four times a year, to try to figure out what I am. And she's a psychologist or a counselor.
Good luck to her.
Yeah, I know. Yes. That's what everybody says. We have a number of T's on, mm-hmm. but we don't have a whole lot of B's. And although maybe we do have some that we just don't even realize are B's sometimes.
Which is probably the case, because one of the challenges of being bisexual is that people don't see you, because most of the time we make assumptions about other people based on basically their partner, who their partner is. And so as a woman who's married to another woman, and I've been with her for 15 years, people who meet me who I don't come out to, you know, who I don't have the opportunity to come out to, basically just make assumptions that I'm a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And at other times in my life, in the past, people have made assumptions that I was straight. Mm-hmm. And that's a challenge for bisexual people, because the only time bisexual people become visible as bisexuals is when they have more than one partner at the same time, in public, visibly. And I think that leads people to think that bisexuality equals that. You know, and yes, of course, some bisexuals are polyamorous, just like some straight people and just like some gay people, but for bisexuals, that's the moment when sexuals become visible, and so people equate that. And, you know, as someone who's not polyamorous, I can't be visible that way. Mm-hmm. So I have to come out and come out and come out. And luckily, I'm someone who likes doing that. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of bisexual people, it's really frustrating, because, you know, if you don't come out, people make wrong assumptions about you. And if you come out and try to correct those wrong assumptions, they say, why are you telling me this? I don't go around telling you what I am. But, of course, for them, who they are is apparent based on assumptions that you make based on who they're with, and you guess correctly. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a challenge.
So when you see Patty and I together, you're assuming what about us?
Oh, I don't even want to say what I'm assuming about you. I'm assuming you're very interesting people.
Thank you.
So
that was a great save.
I like putting our guests in that position, especially guests who've been with us before, although this is Robin's first time with us in our morning slot. So visibility is actually one of those issues.
Visibility is a huge issue. And then respect. And I think that for bisexual people, there are so many people who still believe that bisexuals don't exist.
And if they do, they're incredibly promiscuous.
They're promiscuous, or they're sliding down a slippery slope, you know, on their way to gay or something. And it's really, really frustrating.
Now, it's not the same thing, but a lot of people equate it and use that, you're just on your way to coming out.
On your way to gay town.
Because a lot of teenagers who are taught heterosexuality is the norm, you know, they even date when they're teenagers. I had a girlfriend in high school. I'm going up to my high school reunion in a couple of weeks, my year reunion. And
something wrong with the mic there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a number that.
Yeah, there isn't. And I'm insisting our class call it our 20-year reunion. Because
you like to lie.
Is it your second 20-year reunion?
I can't say that on the air. A lot of teenagers, you know, I went to my prom with somebody who I'm still friendly with. And I think a lot of gay people, when they're coming out, think for a while, okay, well, maybe I'm bisexual. And as they mature, they realize, no, I'm actually gay. Mm-hmm. Which is different than actually being bisexual.
Exactly. And my belief is that, yes, some people do that because the identity of bisexual is broad enough to encompass people who are questioning. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that any identity can be a phase. Mm-hmm. And as we go through life, we discover more about ourselves. I don't think that our similarities usually change, but we discover more about ourselves. Like, we're basically, as we go through life, we uncover more information. And I truly believe that any identity can be a phase. There was a study done by Ron Fox of about 1,000 self-identified bisexual people, and 30% of them had previously identified as lesbian or gay.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, and part of that is because, you imagine that you're 24 years old and you fall in love with someone and you plan to spend the rest of your life with them, and that person is someone of your own sex or gender. Mm-hmm. And most people in that situation will then call themselves lesbian or gay. Mm-hmm. Okay, 10 years pass, 15 years pass, the relationship ends. Whoops, now you fall in love with someone of a different sex or gender. Mm-hmm. Oops. You know, and
what does that mean?
What does that mean? And there are also a lot of people who privately acknowledge that they have bisexual feelings, but publicly they identify as lesbian or gay because it's simpler. It's simpler, and also many people adopt identity that matches their lifetime partner. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, actually it's more complicated than that, but most people would ask, say, why bother? Mm-hmm. For me, it's a political issue to bother. It makes visible information and possibility that I think is important to make visible. But most people who privately self-identify as bisexual publicly identify as lesbian or gay.
Well,
or straight.
And I think in a lot of ways, if they're not doing it for political reasons, there is no motivation.
Right.
If you're in a pledge of you know, allegiance to one person for the rest of your life, why are you, you know, bringing
right.
this up? It's confusing to people. And
there's the fear sometimes, the part of either your partner or their family or their friends, that if you continue to identify as bisexual, then you're somehow withholding full commitment to the relationship.
One foot out the door already.
Right, which is not true at all. It's not at all true. But for me, it's really honoring my own self and honoring my entire self and my history, my potential, which has nothing to do with my current behavior.
And is your wife lesbian, or is she bisexual also?
She is a lesbian who knew she was a lesbian since she was 7 years old.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Okay.
She's definitely very, very high on the Kinsey scale.
Did she ever have those feelings with you? Was she afraid to get involved with somebody who was openly bisexual? Not openly, not just openly, but radically openly bisexual.
No, she was not. And she's a very mature, you know, secure person.
So
I have
she
been,
understood that about you
yeah.
from the beginning.
Yeah, and I have been in relationships in the past, though, with people who were threatened by that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I had one woman who bailed out of the relationship so that I wouldn't leave her for a man. Like, she had this in her head that that's mm-hmm. what was going to happen, and so she bailed.
Right. So one
it's
of the steps
of bailing.
Yeah, which was sad because I liked her. But
she bad for her.
Yeah, she kind of fulfilled her own fear by leaving first.
Wow.
So is that one of the stereotypes about bisexuals, that, okay, you're with a woman this year and that's fulfilling that? Even somebody who's not, you know, polyamorous, somebody who's going to have a relationship, but I'll be happy with a woman this year, and then next year I'll be happy with a man, and then the next year we'll go back to a woman. Isn't that one of the stereotypes that you have to get over, that, yeah, I can just love one person?
Well, yeah, I mean, the reality is, too, that when you fall in love, you don't fall in love with a sex or gender category, you fall in love with an individual person. Mm-hmm. And there's no individual person that's going to meet all of your needs anywhere in the world, for anyone.
Right.
And once you understand that, for me, it was finding an individual person who meets a lot of my needs and who's pretty fabulous, actually very fabulous, and, you know, deciding to be with her. And I don't think for me, there's not this missing piece that, oh, now I miss men, or I don't, because it's about people, not categories for me.
Mm-hmm. We've had this discussion in cultural competence classes that I've been involved in. And that's the language and semantics around bisexuality. It's one of the things that we talk about is, you know, the term homosexual is a word we don't like to use in our community.
Mm-hmm.
One, because it was kind of has a trumped up origin anyway. It's very clinical and its focus is on sex, and which is where we're trying to, you know, overcome those stereotypes out among, you know, uneducated, uninformed straight people who believe that we're only about sex, all of us. That's all we ever, because the word sex is in there, and so gay or lesbian is a preferred term. So what's the best preferred term for a bisexual person?
I mean, I'm happy with bisexual or pansexual. I think language is inadequate, though. I really believe that language is inadequate, and it presents all kinds of challenges, and it... But I think that people will sexualize lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people regardless of what word we use to describe ourselves, and that in our cultural ambivalence about sex and sexuality really costs us a lot, in that people are both fascinated with our perceived difference and also, you know, made uncomfortable by it. So it's a very... I think we have a very perverse relationship with the erotic, in that we're both obsessed with it and fascinated by it and drawn to it,
as
but
a,
also
country,
repulsed by it. Yeah.
As a society.
And then lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender identities get sexualized, because people start thinking, oh, what do? Then that leads people to kind of diminish our full selves. The whole idea that, for example, you know, straight people have lives, gay people have lifestyles.
Right. Yeah.
Straight people have families, gay people have sex.
Yeah.
You know, when in fact we all have lives and we all have families, and some of us have sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that whole idea of sexualizing
our existence
as though that's the only thing that we are.
The whole idea of the gay agenda, you know, and what's your agenda? Well, today you're going to be going to a conference, you're going to be, you started off on
call
a radio.
Call my mother.
Thing. You call your mother.
That's
call
on
your,
my gay agenda.
Call
today.
Your partner. It's on your, you know.
And it's such a focus, I think, it's because it says, you know, it's behavior. It's not.
Right.
It's as if our identity is derived from actual behavior rather than our identity. And it's very different.
Yeah, and when people think of straight people, they don't think of about their sexuality, and they people realize that sexuality is one part of a whole person. Mm-hmm. And that's true for anybody. It's true for me.
I usually talk about the word lifestyle. You know, I say, well, you know, living in an RV is a lifestyle. I have a life.
Right.
You know, and should I narrow my view of, say, well, all heterosexuals, then the heterosexual lifestyle is going to strip clubs and seeing who I can pick up tonight and who's my one-night stand tonight.
Going to sports bars.
How many, you know... Right. How many can I tally on my scorekeeping?
Yeah,
you know,
and that's
is that silly.
That's just as silly as the stereotypes that are made about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. It's just silly.
Yeah. Narrowed to nothing, really. So,
we are talking to Robin Oakes. She is a writer. She's here at the Out and Equal Conference. She was in the PBS documentary Out in America. And we're talking bi. And other sexual orientation and gender identity issues. And I want to get into, right after the break, I want to get into what is the difference between sexual orientation, gender identity. We need to take a break. We'll be back with more with Robin right after this.
KNON thanks the Sons of Hermit Hall for supporting community radio. Every week, the Sons features blues in the night lessons and dance on Tuesdays, swing dance on Wednesday, and Thursday is the acoustic jam. Coming this Friday, September the 23rd, the John Evans Band, Jason Cassidy Band, and the Drop Top Rockets. This Sunday is Mr. Inez. The Sons of Hermit Hall is located at 3414 Elm Street in Dallas. For more information, 214-747-4422 or sonsofhermit.com. If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and Robin Oakes is our guest today. She's the author of Getting By and is here at the Out and Equal Conference, which is being held this week at the Anatole Hotel. You were about to say just before the break.
Yeah, I think you noticed, you mentioned the difference between sex and gender before, mm-hmm. and partly because I used sex or gender when I was speaking. One of the big confusions for people is that in the United States we often conflate these terms. We confuse them. We use them interchangeably. And even the New York Times, which I love, I read it every day, even the New York Times often uses the word gender when they mean sex, because the word sex has the word sex in it, and therefore they avoid using it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's really important to understand the difference that sex is between your legs, mm-hmm. gender is between your ears. So sex is your bits, your biological parts, your chromosomes, and gender identity is whether you understand yourself to be a man or a woman, or something along the continuum between those two things. And then there's, of course, gender expression, which is masculinities and femininities and androgynies, that there's that whole continuum as well, and that one's sexual orientation is a separate thing altogether. And
define that.
And that's whether you're gay or straight or bi, where you fall in the sexuality continuum. So that's who you're attracted to. And so those are all really different things. And oftentimes, I think most people are not taught that in school. I think in some ways we're not given very good education about these topics. In fact, I could say that with certainty. We are not given very good education about these topics in school, and so most of us have to learn this on the radio or, you know, in a program or something like that as adults, or in a book, that these are not the same thing. And the fact is that not everybody's sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, and biological sex line up.
Well, and
the same way.
Even when we use a word like attraction, that means a lot of different things. It's not just sexually. It's about romance, intimacy, emotional,
yes,
you know, psychological attraction, all of those levels of attraction.
I'm so glad you said that. That's really important.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I talk about that in my programs, the whole idea that we dumb down attraction to, are you attracted to this person or not, when in fact there are so many kinds of attractions. There's aesthetic appreciation. I mean, I can look at someone and say, that person is beautiful. And I can have someone I just want to look at, but it may not be a sexual attraction at all.
Mm-hmm.
It may just be a visual eye candy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? And then there are intellectual crushes on... I've had intellectual crushes on people. I've had cuddle crushes on people who I just wanted to, like, be close with but not sexual with.
Right.
And then
there are
sexual crushes. There's all kinds of crushes.
That's one where gay men, I think, are very conscious of it, and yet straight men get away with it. A straight man looking at a 16-year-old girl, doesn't matter what he says about her.
I mean, it wouldn't matter to me. I'd have to...
It does. No, it does.
On the side.
But I'm talking about mostly to society. I can work, like, with Youth First Texas, and I can say about one of the kids that's over there that we're working with, or that, you know, came lobbying with us in February for bullying legislation. You know, that is just a cute kid, right? The kids that were on with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some real cute kids who were on with us. It doesn't mean that I'm sexually attracted
to
them.
Right, it means that you think they're adorable.
It means that I think they're adorable, that I just love these kids, and... I mean, when they were there telling their stories to legislators and had legislators in tears, I mean, afterwards I took a couple of them, just gave them a hug, because you did it. You put that into tears and helped get the legislation passed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love these kids. It's not a sexual attraction. It's just, wow, what a great kid.
Yeah. I feel so fortunate because I get to travel around the country meeting, working with students. I mostly work with college students, mm-hmm. and sometimes with LGBTQ youth groups, and I meet the most amazing people. And honestly, there are so many people who impress me because they're so together and so far along and so eloquent, and I think, how did you get that way so young? Because I know for myself it took so much longer. I really didn't come into my own in that way until I was in my 20s. And when I meet 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 17-year-olds who are advocating for themselves, who are out there doing the work, who are visible, who are eloquent, I am so impressed.
Well, I'm just impressed at anyone at that age who's so comfortable in their own skin, because mm-hmm. just in general, as a teenager, those teen years are very tough because you're trying to find your own identity and figure out who you are.
Yeah.
And then it takes a long time for many people, many decades, to become comfortable with who they are.
Yeah.
And it just shocks me when a 19-year-old is just entering college, is that comfortable with who they are and navigate life in a much easier, elegant way than many people I've known.
Yeah, and oftentimes I meet youth who are working really, really hard on their campuses to make their campuses safe for themselves, and that makes me very sad too. Part of it impresses me because they're so fierce and powerful and amazing, and part of it makes me really sad because that should not be their jobs. They should not have to do that work. We should be doing that work for them. You know, colleges should be making sure that their environments are safe. Students shouldn't have to do that. I feel like we're not doing our job as adults when we don't create safety. Especially high school is even worse. Mm-hmm. And we don't create environments where it's not okay to say homophobic things, where people don't intervene when people are bullied, when people make anti-gay jokes, when people are just plain horrible to students who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or perceived to be different. When we don't do that, we're not doing our jobs.
Which is why I was so proud of these kids when they went down to Austin
to speak for themselves
and speak to legislators. And the fact that the legislation passed the Senate unanimously.
It did.
It passed unanimously. And California, that just passed similar legislation. I'll tell you what, ours is better. We have the counseling component in there that California now is going to have to go back and add in. We got, and I credit those kids, because they spoke to the people in the education committee specifically and had them in tears. I was so proud of them. I just loved them telling their stories. They were fabulous.
And their voices are really powerful. One of the things I'd love to see students do is go back to their high schools and talk to the administrators, because there are so many high schools that are in so much denial that there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. And they can tell now. They can go back and tell their
story. Exactly, because students who are in high school right now are much more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But students who have been out of high school for a couple of years, who are no longer under the yoke of their high school, are much safer, and they're in a better position to speak up.
So, and in that respect, it got better.
It got better for them while they got out.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. You're living in Massachusetts with your wife.
Yes.
What was the psychic catharsis that took place in Massachusetts for couples who were not able to marry and suddenly were able to? When you're just walking the street and living your life, do you feel differently?
It's qualitatively different. Now, I believe over 10,000 same-sex couples have married in Massachusetts. And it's no big deal. That's the most wonderful thing. It is no big deal. It feels very normalized. I live in a very mixed neighborhood where there are a lot of LGBT people and a lot of straight people. Majority straight, but not 99%. It's more like probably 80%. And it's just wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful to live on a street where there are same-sex couples with their children and mixed-sex couples with their children and people who have no children and just people. And the kids all play together, and it's no big deal. And it is qualitatively different.
And so you talk about your spouse and your wife?
Of course.
And
she is my wife, and I'm her wife, yeah. And it just feels very... It's lightning. It's enlightening. It's wonderful. And the amazing thing, I think, is that for some people in Massachusetts, it was a scary thought that this could happen, and people didn't know what it would...
You're going to destroy marriage.
Yeah, right.
Well, what's interesting is the census that was just done, statistics just came out to back this up, that Massachusetts has the lowest divorce
rate.
Lowest
divorce rate in the country.
Number two was Vermont, but do you know who this census showed has the number two divorce rate now? Iowa.
Number two lowest
divorce rate. Iowa.
Where there is full marriage equality.
Right, that's my point.
Oh, it's interesting.
One of the reasons for it, though, is that states that have marriage equality don't break out, basically, their divorce rate between gay and straight. And since I think most gay people, bi people, or same-sex couples, tend to get married old, they tend to have been together longer, and the marriage is more for... personal reasons rather than
Because you're supposed
pregnant
to.
And you're supposed to, and Ushi's pregnant and 16. You know, you don't have marriages for those reasons.
Yeah, not a lot of shotgun weddings, I think, in our society.
No.
Right. So that when those are averaged in, it brings the divorce rate down because we're not getting married at the same rate, and so we're also not getting divorced at the same rate. I mean, it'll happen as same-sex marriage becomes more and more common.
Because we are couples, too, just like every other couple.
Right.
But what I think in Massachusetts, it's no big deal. I think a lot of people who were worried about the prospect or didn't know what it would mean have finally realized that the day after marriage equality happened, the store is still open, the buses still ran, you know, life went on. And I think most people see that it has absolutely no impact on their own day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
And... which is true, and it's been great. I love it. And it's funny because I've really started to take it for granted now.
Really, that's quite the
when I'm home. Mm-hmm. But as someone who does travel to many other states where there is not legal recognition of same-sex partnerships, then that's when I feel the difference.
And when you're here,
Texas, for example.
Do you feel it when you're here?
Yes.
In what ways?
It's a little creepy. It's creepy to not have recognition. And I do think about things like as I drive across, I travel a lot for speaking, and as I go from state to state, every time I land in a state, I think, okay, here, if I were to get into an accident, would my wife be considered my wife?
Mm-hmm.
And in Texas, the answer is if the person who happened to be dealing with the hospital felt like recognizing her, then yes. But if they didn't feel like it, then no.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good feeling.
It's not very secure.
No, it's not. And it's really an awful feeling, and it's also unjust. But I think about that, so I feel kind of tenuous. I feel like I'm standing on a rocky platform when I'm in states that don't recognize my mm-hmm.
And
marriage.
And then that security returns when you get home?
Okay, so when I drive, especially when I'm driving, and when you drive into the state of Massachusetts at every major highway, there's this big sign that says, Massachusetts welcomes you.
Mm-hmm.
And for 7 years, I haven't done it yet, but for 7 years I've had this idea that I want to get out of the car and take a picture of me and Peg standing next to the sign.
There you go.
And like put our thumbs up or something and say, this means us. Because it does. I feel so welcome in my own state. And one of the things that's been really nice for me is every one of my relatives now lives in a state where my marriage will be recognized.
Oh, that's impressive.
All my close relatives. So when I go visit my mom in New York,
mm-hmm.
I'm married. When I go visit my brother in Connecticut, I'm married. When I go visit my cousin in California, I'm married.
Mm-hmm.
Through that grandfathered in clause, but I'm still married because I was married at that time
mm-hmm.
when marriage was recognized there. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. It makes me feel good.
I'm jealous.
Come on over.
Yeah, but you and Aaron don't really want to get married. But you do want to be recognized.
Now, I don't know that we wouldn't want to get married. I think we would. I think it's important to have it recognized where you live.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because that's... I think it's difficult otherwise to really... to feel like you are
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know... I think we are in terms of between ourselves and our relationship, but in terms of recognition, it seems kind of empty to go get it somewhere else and bring it back, and it's meaningless.
Yeah. I mean, it's not meaningless, but it definitely has less meaning because it doesn't carry the weight of law.
Well, we have a superdome in Texas. It's pretty meaningless legally, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have an attorney general who fights mm-hmm. against couples who want to get divorced.
I've been following that.
If you get divorced, that means that for a split second, we have to recognize that marriage. So he would rather they stay married and recognized in other places so that we can deny the recognition.
It's a big la 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 la.
Right.
You know, they're not married, so therefore they can't possibly be divorced. Right. To get rid of that, you know.
We are just about out of time. Robin, you will be at the Outgoal Conference this week. Tonight you're having dinner at...
Yeah, tonight there's a bi-community dinner. And if anybody's interested in attending the bi-community dinner, you can email me at robin@robinoaks.com. That's robin@robinoaks.com. And if you do that by, let's say, about 2 p.m., I can get the word out to the person who's organizing the dinner and
let them know that a couple of other people will be coming with us.
Yeah, so we're going to probably have I'm guessing 20 to 30 people at the dinner.
And I will see you tonight.
Yeah, including you.
Yes.
Hey.
Thank you very much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Robin, for
being
here.
Thank you.
And this is the part of our program where he's just going to bring up... This is where our producer usually... Christian is here in the studio with us today. This is where our producer usually disavows any knowledge of our existence. Christian, would you... Christian doesn't want to do that.
No, we're here, and that's the bottom line.
Oh, okay.
We're not disavowing.
We're here, now. We're up. See, our producer always... was here disavowing who we were and not letting anybody know that we existed. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. Ron, thanks again.